My brother keeps a human head in his closet. I hope I don't end up that way.
This thing, it's gonna follow you. Somebody gave it to me. And I passed it to you. It could look like someone you know, or it could be a stranger in a crowd. It could look like anyone.
Help! Santa Claus only brings presents to them that's been good all year. To the ones that ain't done nothing naughty. All the other ones. All the naughty ones. He punishes. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Bring me one of those chickens.
You got money to pay for it?
You paid for it.
No, but we're the king's men. So, you got money?
Not a penny. I'll still take that chicken.
You don't seem to understand the situation.
I understand that if any more words come pouring out your mouth, I'm going to have to eat every chicken in this room.
You lived your life for the king. You're gonna die for some chickens.
Someone is.
The symbol is associated with a pagan deity named Bagul. He consumes the souls of human children. Early Christians believed that Bagul actually lived in the images themselves and that they were gateways into his realm.
I am seriously positive these were not here. How would we have, just made a campsite in between three piles of rocks just by coincidence?
You don't think this is strange?
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
I am here. This is Mike.
In the state of Mike, how's it going?
I'm okay. Waiting for the rat man.
Very well, very well. And we have a Connecticut American.
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
Pretty crazy, but great.
Very good. And in the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you?
Good.
Excellent. For folks who just stumbled upon us, we are the Dark Discussions Podcast, a podcast that's been around for 11 and a half years, over 500 episodes. You can find us at darkdiscussions.com or wherever podcasts are found. You can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you will have your emails read on the podcast. So ideas, your opinion, a film, whatever, we'll read it on the air as long as it's not trolling. Also, we do have a Facebook group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group where you can join into the conversations. And Eric, what else can they find on darkdiscussions.com?
Well, they can find a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to financially contribute to your online artists like podcasters. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for stuff like web hosting and file servers and computer equipment and movie rentals and so on and so forth. So if you would like to help offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can help. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions, and for every $5 a month that you care to contribute, you'll have the opportunity to possibly choose a topic for us to do the show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons and we draw one on at random on a quarterly basis. So you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or hit the button on any page of darkdiscussions.com.
That's right. Exactly. And thank you for anybody who contributes. We appreciate it because the bills do add up and anything does help. And since we are an all free website and all free podcast site, any donations are greatly appreciated. Now, for folks who are curious what we discuss here is horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, and the like. We try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. As folks have probably noticed in the past few years, the nerds have taken over the world with Marvel and Star Wars and all that stuff. being huge now, so we're here to try to intellectually discuss genre topics and films. So I guess we can get into our topic tonight. And Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about the new horror anthology film that you can find on a Shudder streaming service, VHS 94.
Could be no one left alive in here.
Do I just press the button?
Press the red button.
Just press it.
I assume they're paying extra for this.
Yes.
This is a remarkable story.
Hello? Hello?
Holly?
The veggie masher turns your vegetables into a tasty, mouth-watering paste.
All are welcome.
That's right. VHS 94 is part of a franchise. It's the fourth installment of the VHS movie series, probably best known for the work of Simon Barrett, who's pretty much been in or participated in every episode, including this one. The series has created some folks that have gone off to done some good things, such as David Bruckner, who was supposed to participate in this episode, this movie. He only is a story writer. He is now, I believe, doing Hellraiser, is it? The new Hellraiser reboot. So he was pinned to do that. So he had to drop out of directing one here. And then the folks who are known as, what are they called? Radio Silence. As a duo director group. And they are off and yanked to do the Scream sequel. So, as you can see, this series has made the careers of a lot of folks. I guess we can get into how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. And since, Eric, you actually saw it before all of us, why don't you tell us how you heard about it and what you thought?
Well, I heard about it because I was just channel surfing, or at least the new version of it, going from streaming service to streaming service, trying to find something to watch. And they were pushing this front and center on Shudder. So one night when I was up at 2 a.m. and unable to sleep, I was like, well, I need something to kill time. Let's watch that. So that's how I ended up watching it. It wasn't all good for me, but there was some good. I liked some of the individual stories in this. I didn't really care for the through story. I thought it was a little lame. And the individual stories were of varying degrees of like. So yeah, we'll talk more once we get into it. But generally, I enjoyed it.
Very good. Chrissy, how did you hear about this film and what did you think of it?
Well, my story is very similar to Eric. I was looking on Shudder just to put some things on my list, because I'll just flip through and put things on my list so that if I have a moment and I'm looking for something, I can watch it later. And then as far as my feelings about the film, I assume that all of you guys saw the other installments of this series. I have never seen it. So as much as I was tempted to watch VHS, VHS 2, and VHS Viral, I did not. because I said I would much rather go into this unbiased since it's a reboot and just kind of feel it out. And I am actually right in alignment with Eric. I did not care for the through story. And there were individual stories that I liked more than others. There were some things about this that I really thought were pretty great. And then there were things where I was like, okay, yeah, not really. So I think I'm right in line with him. And really, that's pretty much it. Those are really my only comments.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, for me, I don't really watch television much at all unless it's to see heartbreaking losses by the Red Sox and the Patriots. But I did see that this was popped up through people on Facebook were talking about it, and then Eric mentioned that it was on Shudder. So that's how I heard about the film. I have seen all the films in the franchise, and I'm not a big anthology fan, but this anthology is fairly one of the better group of anthology films that I've seen. The quality, though, as Eric and Chrissy mentioned, including in this one, depends on the story itself. The wraparound stories are usually the weakest, and in this case, that would be true, as both Chrissy and Eric said. The degrees of the other four stories are some were fantastic and some were good. No dogs, I felt. So this does deserve its 93% Rotten Tomato results, I believe. It is a pretty solid film. It could be a top 10 or top 20 horror film of the year, depending on how I rank and go through all the films I've seen this year. But all in all, I enjoyed it. And as all anthologies expect, mix and match and different, changes in the stories. They're obviously completely different stories, and therefore they don't necessarily match well together. But if you take each story individually, they can be pretty solid. Let's go with you, Mike.
Yeah, well, first of all, before I review the movie, Phil, I hope there's a lot of television in your future. As for the film, I thought it was really very mediocre to me. It didn't leave a lot of an impression. In fact, when I had a minute off from work today, I was thinking about back to the movie because just thinking about the podcast tonight, and it took me a minute to even remember what some of the stories were. I've generally liked anthologies. I generally have liked VHS as a series, even though it is spotty, and yes, it does continue the grand VHS tradition of a shitty wraparound story. And this one felt particularly perfunctory, but that doesn't bother me because it is so slight. It didn't really detract from it. Like, they didn't waste a lot of time on it. At least it didn't seem to me. But generally speaking, anthologies start with a strong one and then finish with their strongest and kind of book it. And, you know, in the crappy one is usually like the second. I tend to find this was actually much better and interesting to me in the first half, and then really kind of lost interest in the second half of the film. I didn't really care too much for the last two stories. And I don't know why. I think I liked the first one maybe the best. I'm trying to remember the exact order of the stories, but we'll get into that, I'm sure. I wouldn't say it was a waste of time. I wouldn't say it's bad. I also wouldn't say that it's exceptional. I think it might be the weakest of the four VHS stories, films to come out. But again, it's all short stories, so not one of them is going to be a huge investment in time. And the mileage very much varies with any, as it is with every anthology. That's the curse and the blessing of every anthology, is that you'll likely like some and likely not like some. And then a lot of it just has to do with how they're packaged together.
All right. Sounds good. Barrett.
Yeah, I'm with everyone that said the connective tissue of this movie wasn't very good. The whole overlying story that went around everything. It was probably the one of least interest to me. I have seen some of the other VHS movies. It's been a while. I don't really remember them. I'm not really a huge found footage fan anymore. Just feels old to me. And this is no exception for that. I did like the movie. I enjoyed the mini stories the most. I probably liked three of the four more than the fourth one. The first three I liked more than the last one. But they're all generally pretty good. The movie was enjoyable. I didn't want to shut it off or anything. It wasn't bad. I'd suggest watching it to someone, especially if they have a Shudder account. So,
all right, sounds good. Pretty much everybody's on the same page, except Mike's a little less happy with the film than the rest of us, but generally sounds about right. Eric, do we have a wiki for this?
Wiki! A police SWAT team investigates about a mysterious VHS tape and discovers a sinister cult that is pre-recorded material, which uncovers a nightmarish conspiracy. All right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. Sometimes you're better off just having an anthology without a wraparound story.
You can't really do an anthology without a wraparound, though.
Well, they did it for ABCs of Death.
Well, yeah, that's a little different.
Or they could have a narrator or something. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. It's traditional.
Well, but I mean, there's a lot of short film festivals that do that without the connective wraparound. I mean, I mostly prefer these types of collections without a wraparound because my experience with the wraparound is it's usually really the weakest story.
And it's forced. Yeah.
And the only reason they pick it is so that they can, oh, we can make us something that you can chop up into little parts. Okay. I mean, there's no... The other problem is you can't build any tension when you're breaking up a thing like that. You know, it's like.
Oh, I'm not saying they're good. I'm saying they're traditional.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, no. I do agree with you.
Patient 7, I think that's the name of it, right? The Dan Lynch film. That one was pretty good, the wraparound story. That was a really good one. But generally.
I wasn't brought to like any of the characters in that story, that part of the story. And they were on such a short time that, and then I was onto a story that I liked and then brought back to this story that I didn't care about. So it just kind of got lost in the morass of, everything else because it wasn't as good as the other stories.
Well, also them all dressed with their SWAT gear on didn't help either to identify the characters. And as you mentioned, Barrett, those pieces were very short. It wasn't like you mentioned the Dan Lynch film, Patient 7, I think it's called. One, that wraparound stories were very long. There was like 5 to 10 minutes of in between each of the anthology shorts. And so that one really developed well. But here, it was just kind of quick and dirty, and like as Eric said, it was just necessary. It's tradition rather than anything that really stood out, I felt.
And unfortunately, it didn't look like they put a terrible amount of effort into it. So
yeah, it felt really just lame comparatively.
Yeah, see, I mean, I liked really like one of the better wraparound segments for me, and no surprises, from the original Creepshow, which was the segment starring Tom Atkins and Joe Hill back when he was an actor before he went into writing. I'm not really sure how he got that gig, but it's like a 2-minute segment before. Then you just see the comic book blowing in the breeze kind of throughout the film, and it just zooms to a different page and it tells a new story, and then you get a very quick like 1 to 2 minute wrap up of that, and that's it. And it's a very, very simple story and does not in any way stretch itself out, overstay its welcome. And that's fine. There's none of this, let's gather 5 strangers on a train and have them tell their life story. Mm-hmm. Or Monster Club, which was, oh my God, that was an awful film. Where there was a club of monsters and each had their own tale as to what... It's just, ugh. Some of them are just really, really really bad. And this was not good, but I think it seemed quick to me.
So, right. They didn't waste a whole lot of our time with it.
Right. Because God help me, if in order for us to know who they were going to have to do character development. And I didn't need to hear about the lead SWAT lady's childhood trauma, or, you know, why somebody's first job working at McDonald's had led them to making VHF murder tapes or something. I didn't need all that. This was perfectly fine.
Sure.
Not good. It moved us from story to story, and that's all I care about for an anthology.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. All right. So let's see. So for folks who are new to the podcast or not, basically, Dark Discussions is not just a review podcast, but a critique and dissect podcast. So basically, we will eventually pull up a spoiler alert and warn folks who don't want to hear that. But before that, we generally talk about anything and everything related to, you know, the film in general, such as, you know, anthologies or the people behind the film or things like that, themes and stuff. So we can discuss a little of that before we get into the spoilers. I'll just bring up a couple of things. The people who are behind the film. So we got five stories, which includes the wraparound, two female directors and writers as well. Basically, Holy Hell is the wraparound story done by Jennifer Reeder, who is fairly new. I did an IMDb on her. I couldn't find much about her. Then Storm Drain is the first main story by Chloe Okuno, and she also is fairly new, not much about her on IMDb as well. The second big story is The Empty Wake, wake as in a funeral parlor, directed and written by Simon Barrett, who is best known for writing many of Adam Wingard's films, as well as the recent release this year, Seance, which we did an episode on. Then the third film is The Subject, which is directed by Timo Tajanto was one of the big directors in a prior edition of the VHS series, probably the most one of the most well-liked episodes and one of the most craziest. I forget the name of it, and which
it was the cult episode, though, right?
Yes, yeah. And he's an Indonesian director, he's done a couple of main films since then, none of them have really gained any ground in the States. All are generally horror films, but this is his big return to the VHS series. And it is the only episode in this series that is subtitled. And then the fourth story is called Terror, by a director, Ryan Prose. And Ryan Prose is another individual that is fairly unknown to me. I did some research on him, too, and I couldn't find really anything on him. He's fairly new as well. So Simon Barrett and the Indonesian director, I won't try to destroy his name again, are the only two folks that are fairly well known to horror fans or fans specifically of this series. Now, anybody want to bring up anything related to any of these directors or anthologies in general or found footage, since it has been dormant for a number of years and suddenly, boom, this came out and got a big buzz? The marketing by Shudder, anything. Anybody want to bring up anything that's not spoilery?
I'll say I think Simon Barrett's losing his touch. His segment was my least favorite, and I didn't particularly like the movie he came out with this year either.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. I think this may...
Somebody's getting kicked off the podcast.
Which is odd, because I felt his segment may have been my favorite in the film, and
Well, you are a fan boy.
And I did like Sands fairly well. But yeah, I liked his segment, Fanboy or Not. Chrissy, you were going to say something.
I was. I just wanted to, you know, talk in general that really quickly that I am a very big fan of found footage. And the reason that I really do like it is because it's all about perspective, and because it's almost like the unreliable narrator. You know what I mean? You can't ever trust what you're looking at. Whereas in a third person film, you're always a little bit distanced, or you're always put behind the fourth wall. And I think although found footage has been done to death, and I have watched so many found footage films because I am such a fan, and I have honestly seen a lot of crap, like a lot of really terrible films. But I have also seen some that I don't think could have been done any other way. And I think the reason that we have been seeing a surge in popularity in the found footage films is the same reason that we've seen a surge in popularity of the first person narrator in short fiction. And that is because there's been a social shift to social media, and here's my story, and here's me, and this is my perspective. As opposed to prior to, say, you know, the early 2000s, because it kind of started with email, if you think about it, as opposed to like the Blair Witch time, you know what I mean? Like where before that, everything was third party endorsement. Now all of the advertising for products, all of the marketing for products, all of the marketing for it's all keyed on each individual's perspective, quote, end quote.
Well,
and so I think this is why we're starting to see it pick back up again.
I'm not gonna dismiss that notion altogether, Chrissy, but I think there's a secondary factor in there, which is that the affordability and availability of portable video equipment has become prolific at this point.
Yeah,
whereas prior to 2000, it really wasn't so much.
Well, I mean, I think that's part of it. I think that facilitates making those movies.
Right.
But what makes them popular, well, kind of, as I think that makes them work is a lot what Chrissy is saying. And of course, the other reason that they get so many of them is not only are they now kind of cheap to do because you just need the camera that is easy to obtain, is that Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity made a shit ton of money.
Well, I mean, that certainly helps.
And for very little money. And so everyone thinks they can make the next Blair Witch or Paranormal Activity. And I do agree. I think so much we've seen enough horror films that, you know, unless you have a really, really good director, like when the camera is framed a certain way, you know, all right, killer is going to walk in the back right corner in 3, 2, 1. There he is. Right. You know where the jumps are coming up. You know how it's set up. We recognize the camera angles. We recognize where there's negative space, where a ghost is going to appear or whatever. Well done found footage, by keeping in a character's perspective, makes those sort of setups hard to do. It's one of the things I really disliked about Diary of the Dead, the George Romero's attempt at found footage, is that he filmed the found footage film like it was a normal film. And in a good found footage film, it limits your perspective in a lot of ways. And so, you know, things are happening, but they're happening outside of our ability to see it, where it limits our visibility. And that adds, I think, some of that dramatic tension that you otherwise wouldn't get.
Okay.
No,
I think the three of us just all made good points.
Oh, and one other good point I want to make here. Well, just want to say, just what Chrissy mentions, you know, she's watches a lot of found footage films, and she's seen a lot of bad ones. I've noticed that if someone makes an attempt to do something like really dig into and delve into one particular subgenre, you know, let's say somebody were to try to do something like watch all the slasher films or perhaps every shark movie ever made.
Oh God!
Then they tend to run into a lot of crap.
That's true. That's true.
I think it's just no matter what it is, you're going to run into a lot. You're going to watch every vampire movie or every zombie movie or whatever. You're going to run into a shit ton of crap too. There's a reason why many of these things never get heard of.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I personally would rather have the abundance of crap and people trying so mm-hmm. we get the occasional paranormal activity than just no creative output from people.
I would agree with that. And also the other thing I just wanted to add, where you're talking about, you know, seeing a lot of crap and all that stuff. And I completely forgot what I was going to say. So maybe we'll circle back around.
No, but I mean, wasn't that?
It literally was on my tip of my tongue and then it flew right out of my head.
But Eric, isn't that kind of the Blumhouse model? The Blumhouse model is that, you know, we'll give you, as long as you can make a movie less than a certain amount of money, we'll give it to you and you do what you want.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what I was going to say.
They're like, here's $5 million, no more, no less, make your movie.
Yeah, and then what they do is they look through what they get back and they determine which ones will be sent to theaters and which will go to Shudder or VOD or whatever. And so they're kind of like a common type of thing in a sense. And they've had pretty good success. Even with the ones that go straight to VOD. I mean, you know, like Creep was one that went straight to VOD and all of us loved the first one. So it's a good model, you know, $5 million or $3 million or $1 million, whatever it is, and go ahead and make your movie and let's see what you get.
Especially for horror films that, as a rule, don't need big budgets, don't need big names, that they can be done quick and cheap, and sometimes they end up capturing something, right? And also with horror films, it's really hard sometimes to go and pitch whatever bizarre idea someone has about their killer conjoined twin. You know, or whatever.
Well, and I was going to, I remember what I was going to say, and it was connected to why there's a lot of crap. I think especially with found footage, you run into more crap because there is this misconception that when you are doing found footage and it has to be, quote, realistic, people tend to slack on story. They're like, oh, we don't need to worry about this is found footage. Like, it's fine if there's like a hole or something, because it's got that it automatically has that sort of homegrown, you know, slapdash, like, hey, yo, I'm filming in my backyard kind of thing. We don't really need to take this seriously. And I do think does play a lot into story holes also because, too, in their very valiant efforts to make it feel authentic. Right. And off the cuff, they forget that, no, you really have to pay attention to story thing here. And Chris, I think that's what happened to the wraparound.
Chris, even more important that made films like Paranormal Activity and Blair Witch so well done is because they were spliced together. Because, in other words, Blair Witch was basically a documentary that three people were making, and so they were only recording stuff that they were planning to put in their documentary, so there was really no boring parts to that film necessarily. And for Paranormal Activity, they're trying to film the ghosts, right, or what's going on in the house. And so a lot of problems with found footage films is that they show films that people just recording for like 30, 40 minutes of nothing, such as you know, the houses that October built, for example. There was a lot of you know, just them driving around and bickering and whatever. And all that gets cut out of films like Blair Witch and Paranormal Activity because those films aren't recording the people when they're just sitting around shooting the shit. They're only recording the stuff that is important to what they're trying to make, which is filming a ghost and filming a documentary. And so that I think is why those two films really succeeded and really took off versus, say, some of the, you know, the Z level ones that you find at the bottom of Netflix that are found footage where they have 40 minutes of nothing happening except people that you hate bickering.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's part of it too. And again, that's literally what you said, Chrissy, which is the story. That's not part of the story. We don't need to see them bickering and arguing because that's not the story. You know, the story is filming the ghost or, you know, the girl, Heather, filming the documentary in Blair Witch. And that's why I think you're right on when it comes to story. And they forget that these amateurish films that at the bottom of Netflix, they forget that we're trying to shoot a story, not just people talking and doing nothing. So
right.
We'll see. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up related to you? Any of this stuff, found footage or Z level dollars for this film? I mean, who knows how much this film costs? But yeah, go on.
I will say that the segment done by the Indonesian director, whose name I will not butcher either. I thought that the quality of the video in that segment was a little too good. It was certainly like 4K digital video with a VHS filter on it. And it took me out of it a little bit, but it's a minor.
Yeah, I agree, because it was interesting, because the first, like, you know, 3 minutes to 5 minutes of the film or that segment, it was VHS quality. And then suddenly he puts a filter on and suddenly it's basically high definition. You know, for 1994, that wouldn't be the case. So I honestly, I don't even know why they're doing VHS. They should just call it HD 2007 or something. You know,
I mean, 1080p HD.
Yeah, because you could have these found footage anthologies that have HD cameras or stuff like that. So for some reason they want it to be period pieces, I guess, VHS pieces. But technically, going forward, they could just switch it to HD and then right. You know, like that was one of the big problems I felt about the wraparound story, was the quality of that story was just horrendous.
Yeah.
I couldn't see anything. I couldn't identify the characters, you know, and if that was in better quality, at least I could have gotten more out of it. So
that was the other end of the spectrum for me. So that one was really bad. And then the other one was too good for what they were doing.
Right.
Yeah. The other three stories were perfect. I felt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that one. And then the other one were both the extreme ends of the spectrum of what they shouldn't have done in this movie.
Now, Mike, you're going to say something?
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, it's a conceit. I don't think, you know, the making this as a series of videos from 1994, but it's already a VHS thing, so they already, I don't know why series stopped. Why are you talking to me? Go away. You heard
Mike,
her, right?
Recording. Mike, we're recording.
Yeah, I know, I'm trying. I was turning Siri off so she didn't keep talking back to us.
Gotcha.
But so it was already a conceit to begin with VHS tapes. Now you have to set it in 1994 for four segments that really didn't need to be set in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. And the second segment really didn't need to be in 1994. The third segment didn't feel like it was in 1994. And the last segment felt like they went out of their way to force in references to 1994 to make sure you knew it was 1994.
Yeah, because it seems too relevant to today's stuff.
Yeah, it was like, oh, that scumbag Clinton is in the White House now.
Yeah.
Winky, winky. Okay, we got it. And that kind of ended up distracting me. And I don't think that was any of that was absolutely necessary. It was cute. I mean, I think they made it work okay for the first segment. But I don't know that it was necessary to layer one more gimmick on top of a thing where the gimmick is already that they're VHS tapes.
Well, and I have to agree with Phil here, especially since this is supposedly a reboot, because I had not seen the first three, and there was also a spinoff apparently called Siren, which I also didn't see.
Southland was kind of a spinoff too, or South something. But anyway, continue.
I did a little bit of research on just, you know, reading after I saw the movie. I did a little research just to kind of get my bearings so I wouldn't feel like a fish out of water. And I really agree with Phil. I think especially if they're doing a reboot, why are they even bothering with this? The other thing that I noticed before we get into spoiler territory is that the quote wearing down or the fuzziness quote of the video end quote, you know, really didn't look authentic. I mean, honestly, I still watch things on VHS because I own things on VHS that I'm not going to buy on DVD or Blu-ray unless they give me something extra, because why? I have a VHS tape here of it. Fine. It's beloved to me. I'll just watch it until it
quality
dies.
Quality is the answer to that question. But continue.
Yeah, but I don't really care. I just want to watch. If I've seen the film fucking 200 times, I don't give a shit about quality, whatever. Like, I know the film. I'm not even watching half of it. But my point is that
we get your point, Chrissy.
It doesn't look authentic wear. It looks like stuff that they didn't like. It didn't look real because that's not what my wear out looks like. You know, if that makes any sense. But,
yeah, whatever. Yeah, no, and that's fair. I mean, I know there's fans out there that just will say you have to watch it on VHS, just as, you know, Dan Hunter, Eric's co-host for Ascansity, says, you know, you have to listen to stuff on LP, and that's fine. And I would concur. A lot of the VHS here was in worse quality than I remember. And also another problem with this VHS too, as we all know. VHS is more like Blair Witch, where the camera shakes. In here, the cameras don't shake much at all, especially the ones where someone's holding the camera. So I felt that wasn't realistic. Though I, again, that's at least didn't make me sick and dizzy when I was watching it. But that is another reason why even do it as quote unquote VHS, right? I mean, you could just do it as anything.
They decided they were going to make it VHS, but I think we can all agree it was a conceit and it was transparent.
Yeah, yes. They could have updated it to something newer, you know, and even kept the title, but done something with it to make it, you know, obvious it was newer technology or something.
VHS on DVD, yeah. VHS on Blu-ray. VHS Blu-ray, VHS 4K.
Well, I mean, I think part of it is the fact that now, you know, VHS is almost an artifact, just as, you know, at one point when everybody in the 80s was doing cassette and then CD, you know, that you know, if you wanted something a little spookier, you would do the vinyl, because this was back when vinyl was an outdated technology. So, yeah, I can kind of get, you can do all sorts of stuff. There's no reason why you have to make it period for it to be VHS. Anyway, I don't know.
Right. Well, and Mike, you made a good point, which is none of these stories were truly period pieces. Anyway, I mean, if we look at them just as stories, they could have been modern day or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you still have shitty cable 6 news stories too. I mean, local TV.
Yeah.
Or hell, you can, stories about the rat man living in the sewers is like a week-long marathon on the History Channel.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, and you know, homeless encampments or the Japanese guy that ate 80 hot dogs at the Nathan's, you know, in Coney Island. Yeah, I mean, you have these stories all the time. You know, this is nothing that's outdated. So you could have that as 2021. You could just turn on any television local news, and you're going to get those stories. You know, I mean, actually, you could just watch those stories on national news during the Good Morning shows, because that's not, 80% of that isn't even news or political commentary anymore. It's about, you know, some person that, you know, won the spelling bee or something. You know, I mean, it's not dated stuff. This is not quaint.
The anymore, spelling bee know. Massacre. I like it.
There you go. Next anthology, VHS, 1997. Let's see. What else did we want to talk about? Or generally about stuff that's not spoiler. Anybody else have any more stuff? Anyone?
I don't know if anyone knows who it is. I just completely forgot to look. Did anyone notice? Was that Tom Middleditch in one of those segments? I think it was the funeral
I'd
segment.
I'd be real surprised.
What's his name?
Tom Middleditch. He was the star of HBO's Silicon Valley, or like the lead character.
This is the funeral power one.
Yeah, I think he was.
Okay, there's only 5 actors, and he's not listed here.
Okay, I just thought it was somebody looked like him, or I thought I thought somebody looked like him. But anyway,
no, that's fine. You never know. I mean, some of these people do have some in. You know, I mean, Simon Barrett.
Oh, somebody you know. I was like, it's like
Buckner and all those guys have, and even Brad Miska, who produces this, have in with some major Hollywood players now. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, I was just curious if anyone, you know, had noticed that or thought that. It just seemed weird.
Sure. Right, right. Hey, like I said, you know, two directors, or three, because one's a duo, have already gone on to do Hellraiser remake, or reboot, I should say, and Scream 5. You know, so these films have made people, And Simon Barrett has written numerous stuff for Adam Wingard, as I mentioned, and he's gone off to do Godzilla versus King Kong. So, yeah, there's some backup here. I mean, this isn't just some B grade movie anymore. This series has some pull. So,
right.
It wouldn't have surprised me if it was, but it appears it was just a lookalike.
All right. Yeah. Or I was just delusional. That was the other possibility.
Yeah, you know. It's
possibly.
It's possibly. You woke up early. It was a tough day. You had too many beers, even though I know you don't drink. And
you were too tired from resisting your urge to murder school students.
Indeed.
Yes, just to legally make it clear, I resisted that urge again.
Well,
I think all rumors that to be the opposite are wrong.
We're only talking about that day. A few other days earlier, he probably took out a few students, but that's besides the point. Anyway, all right. So, since we are
going to spoiler flag up,
we're going to do the spoiler flag up, and we're going to talk about everything and anything about the movie. Again, we do critique and review, so we will discuss anything that fancies our opinions on what to talk about and whatnot, symbolisms, actual plot points, all that great stuff. So you have been warned, as Eric said, and now we will talk about everything and anything about the film. Who wants to start? Where do we want to go? I guess
I'll start.
Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
So the first story was in the sewer, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's called Storm Drain, I think it's
Storm
called.
Storm Drain, yeah. So I put this thing on. I start watching it, and first we get a little bit of the tie together story, and I was like, I don't know. And then we go into Storm Drain, and one of the first things we see when we're doing the Storm Drain is that this reporter is doing this story on the rat man that's in the sewer. And she holds up this drawing that somebody did of the rat man. And I just started laughing out loud. I was like, okay, so this is going to be that. But then later on, we kind of get to see rat man, and he kind of looks like the drawing, but it's still scary. So it kind of worked out. But when that drawing showed up, I thought I was in big trouble. I was like, oh, no, what have I done?
It was actually my favorite sequence for some reason. I don't know why, but it just hit me the right way. I just loved something about it, especially the ending part of the sequence where she, spits on the guy next to her.
Well, you know what was really cool that I loved about that sequence? First of all, I have to agree with what Eric said. I saw that amateur drawing, which cracked me up. And then I was like, oh, my fucking God. Like, what are we in for here? But I loved this. This one felt almost tongue in cheek to me.
Yeah.
Like the assemblage of weirdos that they interviewed about seeing the rat man, like the weird guy who said it was like a clown. And he was just sort of creepy. And then there was the couple that's like, oh, it's a crazy guy from the asylum. I mean, that was all, very real.
The guy carrying the AK-47 as if.
Oh, yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a little tongue in cheek, the beginning of this episode. But go on.
Yeah. And I thought I loved the use of sound in this one, too. I thought they did a great thing with sound, like to make you creepy. And yes, Eric, I totally agree. That rat creature was really scary, even though he looked just like the drawing. But you know what it reminded me of? Have you guys ever seen Down in the Mare or. I think it's the marrow, right? Digging up the marrow.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That is what this segment felt like to me. Or it just
the creatures that really don't look real, but are realistic, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, it was fun. And I liked the newscaster's effect at the end of his face. That was so cheeseball. I was like, oh, my God, this is so fun. It was just fun. Like, I was this is really fun. I hope the rest of this movie is as fun as this. Right.
Well, and it's not even really anything really original about it. I've read plenty of books, and I've seen plenty of movies about and plenty of video games where you go into the sewers and, the monster is going to be there, and sure enough, it's there, and then you have a cult there. I read that in a Lincoln Child, Douglas Preston book, and on and on, and so nothing is original, and then yet, like you said, Chrissy, it's just a fun episode. It's a good, entertaining piece. And Mike, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was. Oh, and I actually thought it was funny because I was watching it and there was a, like the cameraman, I think he gets his face burned off.
Yeah, poor bastard.
And I laughed because here's this thing that I'm watching on I think it's a 70-inch HD screen. I can't make out what the fuck it looks like. You know, and I kind of laughed that because they're doing this low-res VHS thing, whatever money they spent on the makeup was completely lost in that scene because it's all like dark and in shadows and it's fine. It wasn't a complaint. I just laughed at the irony of it because that's, again, they show it to you full on for the final segment. I was like, okay, there it is. We still got the payoff for that. So I appreciated that. I also thought the monster reminded me of the head anyway, reminded me of the baby alien, for lack of a better term.
It did, yeah.
At the end of Alien Resurrection.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily a compliment, but it is just a thing that was there.
Sure. But I will say that you know, they used the money properly in this episode because, you know, they used the money for the melting face at the end and, you know, not broad daylight, but, you know, camera lights and whatever. And then where they had issues with having great effects, you know, they're in a dark sewer or a drain or whatever you want to call those things. And, you know, they're able to hide a lot of the special effects that wouldn't work. Because you know, it's in darkness, but there was enough there that you knew what was going on too, you know? So yeah, go on, Mike.
Yeah. Well, I was saying, and I know you, Phil, the thing you probably found the most terrifying in this film was the idea of wading into raw sewage.
Yeah. That's disgusting. Yeah. I wouldn't be going in there.
It was a storm drain.
And another thing I did like about this segment actually too, was that I thought it was pretty tightly written in terms of the Holly character, especially because like they throw in that whole thing about going back to AA and like they just revealed some details about both her and the cameraman who you don't see for very long pretty nicely so that you got a sense of who they were and they weren't just these like faceless people. I thought they used their time very wisely and that they just gave you the choice tidbits that you would remember. Like I wouldn't care so much if she had a husband and three kids, but wow. Oh, wait a minute. You said she was an AA. So that means the guy's being mean to her. Like there's a whole lot of subtext in that one, in those couple of comments that fleshes them both out rather than just saying, you know, she's married, she has three kids. And what about your kid? You know what I mean? Like stuff that's really going to stick with you because it's unusual. Rather than typical run-of-the-mill stuff. I like that a lot.
And Chrissy, it wasn't, you know, like in the fourth story where they said, yeah, Bill Clinton's president. Like, everybody knows that if it's 1994, that you don't have to say that. So here, you know, she's not saying, yeah, my three kids and my husband at home, you know, because in theory, everybody, you know, the cameraman would already know that. So if she said any of that, it would just be unnecessary, you know, stuff for us, the audience, to know about her, and they avoided those mistakes that I guess we, you know, Mike brought up about the fourth story. So I agree. It was interesting tidbits that even if it doesn't really affect or help with the main story, it was entertaining and interesting. It wasn't just, you know, two people bickering about nothing for 40 minutes in some of these Z-grade found footage film. So I agree 100% with what you said, Chrissy. Yeah. And that's a really good comparison with this story here with the fourth story, because like Mike said, even whether we like the fourth story or not, the fourth story had a lot of those moments that people would not say because everybody that would be there already knows it, you know? And this story here, We don't get that, and that's an excellent point, Chrissy, I think. What else do we want to talk about this film here? I mean, this story here, Storm Drain.
Sorry. Yeah. I was just going to say that the ending kind of gave me vibes of The Howling.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, it did. I agree.
I also appreciated they put the little faux commercial in there.
Yes.
Which was a nice touch.
That actually happens because when I had a VHS tape, I let someone borrow my Fright Night VHS tape, a friend of mine, and I forgot to pop out the little tab that prevents recording.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it was this big gap of like 3 minutes of crap that ruined my tape because of it. And that's kind of what happens here. And that was a brilliant what they did because it reminded me of that horror back in 1980-something or 90-something.
By the way, tiny nitpick on the Veggie Masher commercial. You couldn't get that backsplash behind a guy in 94, but whatever.
Indeed. Now, Mike, you were continuing about the commercial. You like that commercial?
No, I just thought it was a nice little touch. And I actually, the segment could have ended with that. I was wondering if like this was going to be a shift into a new segment.
Honestly, because that would have been better than the wraparound story.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort
old
of
commercials.
Well, okay. Actually,
been awesome, Eric. Yes.
Well, and I mean, I would almost go. This would have to. It would almost be a different series. In another anthology that I think we've mentioned in the past on the podcast, but that was not a horror anthology, but was Amazon Women on the Moon, right? Which is like a
Oh my god!
So where that's satirizing late night TV on like the UHF channels before Weird Al satirized UHF. And so you could have similarly done a similar kind of thing. I was wondering if that was something they might have been doing. But the other thing I should point out for our younger listeners is that back in the day, VHS was a mechanism that we used to record video off TV before the age of the DVR. And when you had wanted to save something and didn't want to accidentally record over it, there was a little plastic safety tab that you would have to pull out. And that way that would stop you from recording over it. And some people would loan their tapes to people without that tab popped out, and that song would record over it. That's how you got to preserve all your favorite episodes of the A-Team.
Yes, in fact, I still have some downstairs in the basement. And you know, and the other great thing about VHS that you could do too was if you hated somebody or you wanted to get back at them, you could borrow their videotape, and then you could like pull it out and melt like some of it with a lighter and then find it.
Jazz price. Or you could put tape over it too to do a similar thing.
You could crumple it. You pull it out and you crumple it and it turns into like you know, wrapping paper.
People are fucking evil.
I'm pretty sure that for the forbidding that was on one of those the like 11 through 15 commandments that got dropped in the history of the world. You know, that's something that was forbidden. Thou shalt not mess with the sacred VHS.
Oh, these kids today, man, what they missed.
Oh, God. Right.
There was nothing quite like hearing your ex-boyfriend go, man, my favorite copy of The Highlander is all melted.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a horrible coincidence.
Or with you know Dan Hunter, if a scratch on a record, and then
the
worst.
Now you want to take out somebody's personal, you know, treasure troves and memories. You've got to like launch a terrorist attack on the host servers for their cloud uploads.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
Oh man, what a nice trip down memory lane.
speaking of that, there was this. My law class I took, or marketing class I took in college, there was this thing we had to learn about, like for some reason, all the data every third week would disappear from this building that they put their backups in. Everything would just disappear. And so you would just have these blank tapes and they couldn't figure out why. And eventually they found out what it was, a magnet truck, one of those big ones that you know, lift things at construction sites would pass by every 3 weeks, head into
Wow!
And it would just wipe out everything.
Yeah! Magnets!
Fantastic! I love that.
Science,
there's a short
bitch.
Story in there somewhere. There's
it is.
So
isn't that awesome?
Story in there somewhere.
Yeah, and they, the reason they put out cameras to figure it out, and out of the blue, they saw this magnet truck go by, and it was that night. It's like, holy shit, that's it. So every 3 weeks, and it would head to this building site down the road. It was kind of funny. It was great. And that's why we should have multiple places where you keep stuff, not just one building, is what we learned.
Redundant backups.
Exactly. Exactly. This is a cloud too.
But that also reminds like the old days when like the cops would go someplace and like, do you have the videotape from 3 weeks ago? It's like, no, we just recorded over it. You know, it's just like for the security cameras where they would just have like three tapes and they would just reuse them again and again and again.
Oh,
the cameras were put in install, but they never use them. It's just, you know, people think it's in use. Anyway,
they still do that now.
That's true. Anything else about Storm Drain? Anybody want to bring up anything?
No, this was easily my favorite of the segments, and a lot of that's just because I'm a monster guy. And so this had a neat monster, and I liked it.
Yeah.
All right, sounds good. Sounds good. Yeah, it's unexplained too, and we don't know why it spits acid, but it does.
And it feels like it's like just the right length. It has a payoff. It doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what's good about it? Another thing that's good about it too is that the reporter and the cameraman, they're saying, you know what, this rat story is stupid. It's just, you know, one of those public interest stories to get quote unquote clicks, you know, in 1994, whatever click is. But when she finds homeless people down there, she goes, and maybe children because they find the teddy bear, she goes, this is a better story. Let's do a story about homeless people in the storm drain. And that, you know, it's reminded me of China Syndrome when Jane Fonda's character and Michael Douglas are filming stupid little stories like The Rat Man. And then out of the blue, they have this big story that they could do, and it was like, hey, let's do it. And so that kind of reminded me of what this Holly was doing here and Jeff was doing here. So I like that. You know, it showed that they weren't just putzes that were just getting a paycheck.
No, they were putzes because they thought homeless people was a bigger story than a rat man in the sewer who was going to be leading a revolution.
But usually the rat man is just nonsense, you know, while homeless people is a real story. And this is before San Francisco was filled with homeless people. So this was like a major story back then, the homeless people.
But, all of California, not just San Francisco.
Well, that's
It's bad in San Francisco. Phil should visit San Francisco. He can dodge poop on the sidewalk.
On the sidewalk. Yes.
Thank God I went there back in the 90s. It was still good.
Yeah. Yeah, this is why Phil lives in a cold weather state, is that you don't get a lot of people wanting to take a shit outside when it's cold out.
Either that or it's
and it's hardened if it is. They aren't brave enough.
That's true. But I don't know if I could live in California today with all the poop on the street. Yeah, that's kind of gross. Yeah.
I don't know that you have a choice.
Yeah. Well, I'm not in California, so maybe maybe California's spreading. I don't know, but it's
well. Yeah, they say so. Goes California, so goes the country. As goes, you know, so poop on the street coming soon, fire,
covered in shit.
Yeah. Well, when she started interviewing the guy with all the black stuff on him, I was like, oh, don't tell me that's feces. I was like freaking out.
And I said, someone's gonna have night terrors tonight.
Yeah.
Spread the feces all over your skin, Phil.
It rubs the feces on its skin.
It rubs the feces on its skin, rolls the hose again.
I mean, I do have two, you know, little girls that I have to, you know, but at least when it's your own family and it's your own dog, it's okay. But
you're,
when it's just
you're
like
rubbing feces, your girl's feces all over you. Was that what?
funnier.
Hey, Barrett.
The second segment.
Barrett and Eric, that's what I was talking about last week when I have to edit at least one comment a week from Mike.
You don't have to. You choose to.
Anyway, let's see. All right, so let's move on to the next one. The next one is the Veggie Masher. No, I'm just kidding. That was the little commercial inside the Storm Drain. And that was directed by a different director, by the way. That was directed by Steve Kostansky. Directed and edited. And it was actually players. Yeah, who cares? Anyway, all right. So Empty Wake. The Empty Wake. This one is by Simon Barrett, written and directed. And Empty Wake meaning a funeral pyre. So let's talk about this one here.
I felt this was the most unoriginal of the four.
Yeah, it was pretty much telegraphed from a mile away.
Yeah.
Well, there was a...
I did like the corpse, though. The corpse was awesome.
Yes. Well, I mean, you knew something was in the coffin. I mean, that was obvious. I mean, we knew there was something in the storm drain, right? So, I mean, that was telegraphed. I mean,
I will say that there was a, I don't know if it was an intentional twist. There was a twist on my expectations because you're dealing with a coffin, so my mind immediately went to vampire.
Okay.
So I was kind of surprised by the way they went, mildly disappointed, but I did like this, you know, because I wanted a vampire because I can see zombies every week on Walking Dead, but no, it was a good zombie. I liked the zombie. I liked the fact that it was blind that they went with that.
After seeing the Rat Man, which I really liked, I enjoyed this one too. I did have some problems with it. Like, I knew what was going to happen. Like you guys said, it was telegraphed. I thought at first, maybe because it was so telegraphed, that it was really slow in the beginning. I was just like, okay, I kind of know what's going to happen. Can we sort of get to it? But I did think the threat of, you know, don't call me, like the boss being like, don't call me, it wasn't enough of a deterrent for me. Like, I was like, dude, if I was that freaked out, I would be like, okay, I'm just quitting my job, like, or something. Like, I felt like the reason for her to stay there when she was getting freaked out was just not enough for me. Like, I felt like there needed to be some kind of motivation, even if it's, look, you know, this is my eighth job I'll be fired from in 2 months if I leave. Like, we just needed something to up those stakes because I just felt like,
well, I'll say this.
I would be like, just up yours. I'd be out of there.
I'll say I concur with what you're saying, but again, Haley, who I liked her character a lot, she doesn't know she's in a horror film. So technically the only thing she has to worry about is being a woman and being alone in a building. So everything else is kind of just like, yeah. And then when she even thinks that there is an issue with the coffin, it's not a monster. She says, oh my God, the guy's not dead. And they thought he was dead and they put him in the coffin. What do I do? So to her, there really wasn't any threat supernaturally until we actually see the zombie. And so I got why she stayed and didn't like say, I'm out of here, I'm quitting, goodbye. Because again, the only threat she thought was, oh my God, the funeral pyre fucked up and they put someone that was thought to be dead actually in a coffin. What do we do? What do I do? And she calls the boss, and the boss says, don't be silly. He's dead. We know he's dead. You know, we embalmed him or whatever. Stop being an idiot. And if you call again, you're fired. And so that's why I felt it was like, okay, it quells her fear. So that's the reason why I guess I didn't have that problem that you did, Chrissy. Again, the only thing I felt she worried about is a serial killer or a rapist or something.
At one point, she did try and take off, but at that point, the weird dude just showed up and locked her in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so basically, to set the story up, is basically there's a middle-aged man, has passed. They say that the coffin has to be closed because
they had to stitch up the body pretty bad because it was some sort of accident.
His head was in bad shape.
Yeah. So they basically have a new policy where they're recording wakes now, similar to, as a memory thing to for whatever, you know, like they do at weddings or whatever. And so they have to have someone obviously there at all times. And since it's a slow night and they're only showing one wake at this time, they only just need the one person, and it happens to be Haley's turn to do so. So everybody leaves except her, and as she's waits, no one shows up. And then a huge storm where the lights fizzle off and on, you know, when a lightning or thunder hit, there's like intermissions between, you know, lighting, and she has to go and flip the switch in the back room to restart the lights and things of that nature. And so a young woman all alone in a deserted building when there's a thunder and lightning storm, obviously that's not too good. And then she believes she hears some things in the coffin, and when she returns from turning on the lights again, the coffin has moved a bit and confuses her. So she's hoping to close down, but again, this is like a 3 to 4 hour showing, and no one shows up until suddenly this big Italian looking guy or Greek looking guy shows up, starts speaking some foreign language in prayer or something, and he's the only one that shows up. And since we knew it's a horror film, unlike she, I assumed he was saying a magic spell or something to raise the dead. Am I way off to think that?
I think that's what I thought.
Already alive. I would say he was trying to contain it.
Yeah, because he was the coffin was moving in the very beginning. Because remember, the two guys put it back into place.
That's
so
right.
I think he's at that point still. Yeah, he's already a zombie or whatever.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. So if the coffin moved even before this guy showed up. Right. So what was this guy showing up for, and what was he saying? And yeah, okay, that's fair. But either way, it was creepy.
Yeah.
Just having this guy show up.
Yep.
Let's see. What else we want to talk about this story? The reveal. Anyway,
I liked that they went with the fact that all the parts are animated, so when like his hand falls off.
Yeah,
no particular reason, but the hand also comes to life, which I kind of liked, because really it's, you know, zombie rules are all very, oh, by the way, yeah, good luck shooting that one in the head.
Well, it's like Return of the Living Dead, right?
Right.
You're chopping the body and it's still moving around.
It keeps going.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty cool. It was a nice little thing. I don't want to say this in a bad way, you know, that whoever said it, this is really kind of the least original, or at least because we've seen so much zombie stuff in the last 20 years. The least shocking, but still an interesting premise of just having the woman trapped in a funeral parlor with, or in a room with a zombie, is an interesting idea because she's just a normal person. She doesn't have the ability to magically murder every zombie she comes across. It's a blind
zombie.
She doesn't
know she's in a heart. She doesn't know she's in a horror film.
Well, she certainly knows it when she sees the zombie.
Right.
The zombie looks cool. I think that's the best part of it.
The zombie looks cool. She's a normal person, but the zombie has a handicap. So it's just a neat little thing. And again, this is another one where I don't think it went too long. I think not a lot happens for the first two-thirds of it, maybe.
Yeah, it was more of a psychological thriller. The first two-thirds, you know, like it's getting you pumped up for frights. You know, it's trying to make you feel like you're in her. In other words, she's the cipher for us. You know, like a woman all alone. Right. The lights are going off. The thunder and lightning. This weird sounds coming from the coffin, and whatnot. So even though it's slow, it kind of, you know, had me on edge a little bit. At least for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on,
except if we all would have handled the zombie much better.
Well, and the ending was a little ambiguous for me personally, just because of the weird camera angle. I couldn't quite tell if we were supposed to think that she just survived and was climbing out through the rubble, or whether she'd been zombified.
No, I think she was zombified because she was walking the same way that the zombie that we saw was.
Right.
And I did
walking on rubble, so I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, but it was heels. There was something very specific in her gait. Okay. But also I'm trying, you know, I'm a big Tornado fan, but I'm honestly trying to figure out.
Except when it hits your house.
But yes, absolutely. When it hits my freaking house. Good point. But, you know, the thing is, I don't know. I'm still trying to decide how I actually feel about the introduction of the tornado at the end. Like, I'm not sure. I sort of sat there and went,
interesting part.
Okay, this is really interesting. No, and I liked it because it was interesting and different and fresh. And I was like, ooh, yay, are we going to get to see a tornado? Oh, God, because, you know, that's me. I'm all over that. But then afterward, I was kind of like, you know, that felt a little bit like they threw it in there because they didn't, I don't know, like it wasn't organic. Like it didn't work for me necessarily as far as a story element because it just kind of felt like thrown in there. I don't know why.
All right. I think we've finished. I think we've finished this story. Do you have anything else we need to do? I'd kind of like to see a tornado.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Why not?
Well, it is a big storm. Obviously, it would have been better if they said this, you know, we saw a pamphlet that said this is Nebraska or something. And then we could, okay, you know, there could be a tornado. So when the tornado does hit, it wasn't as surprising because, you know, not every state has tornadoes that happen that. Obviously, I guess. Obviously, you know, Connecticut is an exception. But, you know, it came out of nowhere in a sense because of that, I guess. And
well, the thing was the guy, the creepy guy that came in to sit there and talk all that gibberish. In all fairness, he did mention they're saying there's a tornado warning or something or a tornado watch. And that's fine. Because it needed to be justified. Somebody had to mention it at least once. Otherwise, it would have been like, whoa, what the hell is this? However, I almost feel like it should have been mentioned at the beginning. Like, because at the beginning, it's all quiet. There's no storm. You know what I mean? So then this storm
The problem with that is, the problem with that is then she wouldn't be there because a tornado alert would cause them to have to go into a cellar or somewhere safe.
Right. So maybe she had to, during one of the calls, say it's, did she ever, when she called one of the times, did she say, listen, the storm's getting really bad? Like, we just needed, I don't know. I just, maybe if there was a little more, it would have worked a little better for me. But don't get me wrong. I love the tornado part and I thought it was fun. And honestly, I was very impressed with how they sort of depicted it hitting the building at the end. I was very impressed with that. Like the way that it really looked freaking real. I was like, damn, did they steal footage from somewhere and drop it in there? Because that looks totally real. You know, just the way it kind of hit the camera and all the shit blew all over it. And I don't know. I just thought that was so well done. But I'm still, like I said earlier, I'm still kind of, I don't know how I feel about it still. Like, I'm just sort of like, that was kind of weird. But on the other hand, that's good because I'm telling you, out of all the segments in this movie, I'm going to remember that one because of it.
Sure.
It was this really cool thing they did with a tornado and it was kind of weird. And, you know, it was cool, but it didn't quite work for me, but it kind of did. So I think in that sense, this segment, I think I'd have to put this next to Ratman because I liked both of them. I think Ratman I liked a little more, but this one I also liked.
Yeah, well, and also another thing that I thought was really awesome about this one too was when, you know, because pieces of the zombie are falling off because, again, they had to stitch it back together because we find out that he was some cultist that suicided off a church building or something. And they obviously sewed him back together, but they couldn't open up the coffin. And when he starts falling apart, half his head is near where she's hiding. And I knew, I'm thinking, oh my God, the thing can't find her because it's blind. But if that head, since we already saw the hand moving, if that head opens its eyes and looks at her, she's done. And sure enough, they went there. And I was like, oh, my God, that's awesome. And then right as she's about to get taken out, the tornado hits. And then, like you said, Eric, it's a little ambiguous after. And after I watched the whole film, I went and read the wiki. And it is states that what Chrissy said, which is she is zombified. But at that point, once you have the chained up front gate or door, I think, yeah, I would have just smashed through one of those windows myself. I was like, I'm out of here. And at that point, I would just smash through the windows. But it was too late. She was zombified. Such is life.
No, it's not.
Either way, she was my favorite character in the whole movie. But and really? actually, the only character that I felt was unflawed. Everyone else was like, you know, the news reporter and the cameraman—they're just phonies. And then the people in the end were all weirdos. And then everybody in the third one were all losers too. So she was the only character I thought that was just a bad luck. She was just the bad, wrong place at the wrong time.
Oh, yeah, I'm just trying to do her job.
The next one that was trying to save her.
Which one is that, Eric?
The guy in the next one that was trying to save the missing girl.
Oh, well, they assassinated the criminal, and that immediately made me want them all dead.
What?
What?
Cersei?
You cannot assassinate people. You have to arrest them. And he was already arrested, but they decided.
No, they did. They absolutely could, because they did it.
Yeah.
Right. But that's the reason why I didn't like any of them, because they're all evil. You don't.
No, they were killing a crazy guy.
Once the guy.
Hang on.
But Cersei's revenge is cool.
So we're done with the tornado segment. Moving on to the next one.
Yeah,
two things about the tornado segment. One, I will say, it's weird, but I got a massive
boner
nostalgia rush when they went into the closet and there was a stack of VHS tapes. And I was like, oh my God, I remember that going to the store and buying like a 20 pack of VHS tapes.
Yeah.
And of course you would always get whatever was on sale. So you'd have like, here's 10 JVCs and then there's, Fujis. And whatever. So, and Kodaks. And so that was just a weird nostalgic thing. But here's the other one. Maybe this is I've been going to funerals since, I was five because it's an Italian family. Did she seem like she was dressed like somebody who's supposed to be running a funeral parlor?
She was dressed like she was going downtown, big city to look for guys.
Yeah. Totally.
Or maybe hosting at a bed and breakfast somewhere or something. I don't know. It just didn't look like, hi, your family's all dead. Come take a seat. Where can I get? No, just,
Yeah, well, because she was wearing the high heel mini boots. And like a sundress. That would be, downtown Boston looking for guys where I live. So, yeah, she wasn't appropriately dressed. You could be right.
I mean, she wasn't even in black,
That's true.
I mean, that most of those people that are in funeral homes that work there, if they're not dressed in black, they're usually wearing navy or, a somber color. I've seen maroon. I've seen, but they're usually dark. I've even seen like dark forest green.
Sure.
That did strike me.
Funeral homes, do you?
I've actually thought that might be my next career is actually going to work in a funeral home.
Oh, I'll tell you one thing. If I could have chose a career, I think I would have done that. Because it's a good business, for the
customers.
That's true. It's a skill that isn't necessarily common. A lot of that is based off of family businesses.
It's recession.
Dead bodies are fine, but poop is off the table.
there's poop probably in those bodies.
Yeah, but see, poop. Poop is feces. Bodies aren't feces. Bodies make feces, but they aren't feces.
But they may have feces in them when you have to, do whatever you got to do.
Well, they do kind of. I mean, all feces is decomposed.
feces just decompose food, right? I mean,
right, right.
You're all going to become feces at some point anyway.
Indeed.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's the same.
You're really what you are is just pre-feces.
Anyway, I think we can
science
move on to
science lessons with Will in mind.
That'll be the second thing he deletes from the podcast.
I think we can move on to the next story, which is called The Subject. And The Subject is the foreign language film in whatever language Indonesia speaks. And I used to know, but I forget. It's been a while. But it's directed by Timo.
Swedish.
Janto. They're all Swedes, Mike. They're all Swedes.
Exactly.
And so he is probably well known for his deal in prior VHS one, the cult one, as you said, Mike. And to be honest, Indonesia is like a multi-language country. But either way, we'll go with this film here and discuss this one here. And to answer your question, Barrett, Cersei's versus the Doctor. Or I should say the SWAT team. It's different mediums, different shows. So
it's okay in one show, but not another.
It's
a moral thing. Yeah, so why is the medium different?
One is in fantasy, which
isn't this
really
is fantasy. It's just a different type of fantasy.
Well, all right, I don't need to.
We're not making. Cyborgs aren't really being made right now. It's not real.
How do you know?
Come on.
How do you know?
I mean, yeah, they kind of are. I mean, you got
not
people
like
with
that.
Bionic limbs.
Not like that.
Obviously, the point is that this one here, this movie here, is supposed to take place in our world, real world, even if it is fantasy or science fiction or pretend or whatever, and whatnot. So.
I don't buy that. I'm good. That's fine. You can have.
I don't know what you're arguing. What are you arguing about, Cersei?
You're okay with her having her big revenge. You thought that was awesome, but these guys shooting a guy who's taking people off the street and doing these weird things to him—it's not cool for them to kill him.
I've been doing it for years. Anytime police do anything illegal like that, absolutely, that's disgusting. You always treat anybody that you have as a prisoner. With respect, you don't just shoot.
And I'm just saying that's disgusting. An inconsistency. She killed a buttload of people.
Well, I like Darth Vader too, and I like Dracula, but what's the big deal with liking villains? These guys weren't supposed to be villains; they were just fucking assholes.
Yeah, you were cheering on her actions, but that's a whole other story. Let's
The
audience can decide for themselves.
Yeah,
that's a villain though. You gotta like the villains. Everybody likes the villains.
No, you
these
like
guys were villains too.
Well, they turned out to be villains when they aren't supposed to be. They were supposed to be.
Are they? Officers. Were they police or were they military of some sort?
Well, that's bad too.
Well, the problem is that they weren't. They didn't stop there. In my opinion, I mean,
yeah, that's true.
It was kill the victims too.
What, put it this way, they get in there, they got the guy dead to rights, all they had to do was handcuff him and take him away. And that's it. And they didn't do it. And if they had done
it's
that,
fine.
They,
we can move
they,
on
they
from this argument.
Then they could have brought the forensic team in and they would have found out what's going on.
I just find some inconsistencies there. That's fine. I can believe that and you can believe there's no inconsistency there. It's good.
Well, like in Darth Vader and Cersei's and Daenerys.
I didn't bring up Darth Vader. I didn't bring up...
What's the difference if you like any of those characters? That's just villains.
No, because he's not talking about... No. You're talking about the characters versus their actions.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm completely confused. So the characters versus their actions.
In other words, you're trying to say I like Cersei's as a character. He's talking about you liking her actions as a villain. That you liked her having her revenge and murdering people. And that's how you kill those fuckers. Whereas here you have a horrible human being and you're upset that they killed that fucker. I think that's what he's trying to say.
That's perfect analogy. Oh. Yes, that's exactly.
Yeah. What I was upset because they had him dead to rights. I just don't like police officers when they do or military when they do bad things.
I understand. I was just bringing
up. But when the queen does it,
we can move on.
OK,
I'm good. I'm good. Right. Totally good.
OK. Okay. So, all right, what do we want to talk about this story?
I liked the cyborgs, man. They looked fucking cool. Especially yes. The one with the skull head, where all the skin was pulled away. That thing was awesome.
I liked it when she found her specialized handgun. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you got the power that up. Was, yes. It's, yeah. It was very, very first person shootery.
Yeah, I initially I thought the gore was really tastefully done, like that moment in the beginning where he's cutting into her brain, and I was like, oh God, please. And I liked the way they did that. And actually, even the gore as it went along, the gore sort of increased, but I didn't feel like it was overly disgusting to the point of see all our gore. Like, it fit with the story, and that worked for me. I love that they don't show you at first what they did to the girl. You know, we get to see and feel that horror from the looks on the policemen's faces and from their comments. And I thought that was really effectively done because right. As a viewer, I was sitting here going, holy fuck, what is she? Oh my God. Like my imagination is going crazy, going, what the fuck did he do to her? And it just kind of upped the tension and made me really like so anxious to see more. And I think going back to what I said at the beginning of the podcast, this is one of those moments when found footage is so effective because you are seeing through the eyes of the girl and you don't even know what you look like at first. Well, so I'm glad they put that off for a little bit. That was kind of cool.
And there was a great, probably the best gut punch in the whole thing for me is later on when she finds her own half face in a jar.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh no.
I loved that so much. I really liked that. And, you know, it's interesting too, because, I think this is one of those ones where I started to realize all of a sudden that this movie kind of did have a sort of theme beyond the connection. Like all these films kind of tied together in one way. And that was sort of that it was – and I'm not going to go that deep with it because it's just a fun horror movie. But what I got out of it was I think in this particular segment, if this particular segment had a metaphor or theme, I feel like it was about – how technology eats us alive in that, you know, and then that moment, Eric, is what made me think of it when you said it, because she sees the head in the fluid with her mouth sewn up. And it kind of supports that metaphor that when technology takes us over, we no longer have a voice. And technology meaning, you know, we all communicate now through the internet. You know, there is less personal interaction. There is less talking on the phone. There's less all of that. And it also reminded me oddly, and this is when I was watching this, after that popped in my head, my dad had gone to see an absurdist play in the 60s. And he came home and he said, you know, he was telling me about it years later. And he said, oh, my God, I came home and I told your mother, we are never going to go see any more absurdist stuff anymore. And my mom was like, why? You know, she was like, well, Charlie, I really like that. And he's like, what did you like about that? You know what it was? It was literally the curtain came up and it was a pile of televisions and, you know, vacuum cleaners and like, you know, whatever the technology was at the time. This was the late 60s. And underneath it, it was a baby crying from somewhere in the pile for 15 minutes. That was the whole thing, was a baby crying under a pile of junk for 15 minutes. And I think that's where this is trying to go.
Is an argument between your parents?
Did you guys hear me?
Yeah.
No, I'm just trying to make sense of what you said.
No, the technology is swallowing us alive.
The technology is swallowing us alive. That was the simple way.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you know, this one is crazy right from the beginning when we find, you know, a spider head. It's like, what the fuck? But
oh, again, yeah, that was so cool, though. I really like that. It reminded me of that
spider head.
It reminded me of that thing in, what is the Pixar? Is that Toy Story where they have the
yes.
ears? All that's like yeah. a, yeah, that was cool. Where, yeah, that's what that reminded me of. I thought that was neat.
Not Ed.
Whatever the kid
Sid.
Is.
Sid.
Yeah.
Sid. Yeah.
Yes. I think it's that Sid who murders all the toys and builds new toys out of them. How dare he be creative? How dare he take some initiative?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's that. Yeah, actually, that's a good point, Mike. That he was actually a hero, Sid, because he was the future scientist in the world, and they turned him into a villain in the show. That's not right. Anyway, or in the movie. So yeah, this one here. Yeah, this is complete gonzo. This episode again. Chrissy has points though. It could be used as commentary about many things, including technology. And I'll even say law enforcement violence, unnecessary violence. But either way, it was typical of this director based off of his other stuff that we've seen in ABC's of Death and in his prior VHS, because they're like ultra gory and ultra insane and yet always pretty solid.
Yeah, it was kind of Mad Creators experiment turns on him story, but it was just done really well. I just really liked it.
What's weird is wherever I'm at the point in my life now where I don't even necessarily remember my own opinions anymore. So I kind of think it was my opinion that the cult segment in the VHS, I think, was it VHS 2 or VHS 1?
Yeah, I think it was 2. I can't
that
remember.
Was that, yeah. Which is the one that I think everybody loved, but I thought was a little long.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. Yeah.
And I kind of had the same feeling here, that I felt like it really could have ended when the cops came in, and then they turned it into Hardcore Henry for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And
first-person shooter.
Yeah, and I think they could have... Like that to me was like, and that is like about the midway point of the film, I think, is like the midway point of that short or something like that. So that was like sort of where I started to lose some of my affection for this movie.
The movie changed perspectives, right? Because the first half of this piece was the doctor's perspective. And then when they kill him off, it's suddenly you still have another 15 to 20 minutes of this episode. And now it's the girl's perspective. And it's like kind of was a little jarring, I felt. So I see your point, Mike. I actually, even though I could, the gonzo last 20 minutes was, I could see why everybody would love this episode. For me, it was the first 20 minutes with the kooky scientist that I like better. So I'm kind of like you, even though
I do too. And it's not, I mean, that's the kind of the alchemy of editing, right? Is that there may be nothing wrong with the way the second half of the film is edited, but if the first half of the film is too long, then you're going to feel it in the second half, and you're going to, and so it's really hard sometimes to find out where the problem lies. And I preferred the first half. I felt it could have ended there. I don't know how I would have felt about the second half if it was just the second half or the first half had been shorter. But I think just for the whole thing, for me, I was kind of done with that story and ready to move on to another one. Again, about 10 minutes, I think, or so before it actually ended.
Yeah, I think that the end sequence was a little bit long. I liked it. But it was.
I think they could have ended with I with Chrissy. I think they needed to have that shot of her seeing herself.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that we needed the whole first person shooter thing. But again, that's me, and I'm sure some people really like that.
No, I didn't. No, I do kind of agree with you. I was like, okay, I get the point. The one moment that I really did like was when she comforts the girl who was crying for help.
Yeah.
That was really moving, and I think it sort of was making that statement that, okay, but we're all still human, no matter how much technology we put on or rebuild or use, in the end, we're still people. But I thought that movement was particularly moving. Well, and then she kills her to put her out of her misery, which also shows that they're still, that this girl is still human left in her. And
no matter how much she was tortured, there was still human left in her.
Yes. And so then I think, I don't know why they put that moment in there, but if I had to guess, I'd say because like you guys said, the first person shooter thing after that was like a little bit too long. I think I definitely could have shaved that down, but it also gave us a justification. Like it also made us feel better about her doing that because we just saw her have a very human moment. So we know, okay, she's not just a crazy monster shooting things. Like right. You know what I mean? She's still human. And she's doing this because she's full of rage and because she's sad. And I think that may have been a way to get audiences like us to sort of not identify with her, but to connect with her in a way as opposed to just, yes, empathy. Instead of just being like, oh, look, we're in a first-person shooter game.
Right.
Like it just added that little layer because I think if you didn't have that, it would have just been like, okay, what the fuck? Like this is just, all right, whatever, dude. Like I get the point.
And Phil, I think you misinterpreted what I was asking about previously, because what I was asking about is after she gets her gun and goes on her spree and everybody's trying to take her out, there's the one dude who is not trying to kill her and is like, come with me, let's go. That's who I was talking about.
I figured that's what you meant because he even was horrified when his boss blew away the scientist. He was disgusted. Yep. And so he was a good soul right from the beginning because he was an honorable policeman that wanted to just arrest this guy, bring the forensic in, and that's it. While his boss and the rest of the SWAT team that were just, you know, proles to the head were there just to be dinks and kill everybody and whatever.
Yeah, so that's the dude I was sympathizing with.
I would say he was the most honorable, whereas the woman you were talking about was the most innocent.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Yeah. So his character, I would agree as well. His character was as good as anybody in this movie. You know, he wanted to do good, and that's all he wanted to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Little goody two shoes.
Didn't help him.
He died a horrible death because the other mutant takes him out.
Well, and the story is never help anybody because people suck.
That's true. Indeed. Even if they're mutants, they suck because they're still people.
Even if they're toaster heads.
That's right. Yeah.
Toaster head.
Can I just say that the other thing I loved was when the guy with the huge sword arm got off the fucking thing. I was like, that is badass.
That was
awesome. For some reason, it made me think of Silent Hill, even though it's different. But that's...
I could see that. I was just like, oh my God, that's so badass. Like, how'd they do that? Like, for a second, I just was very entranced by it.
Mike, what was that weird World War II film that I didn't really like that was a gonzo midnight movie from a year or two ago or 3 years ago?
Overlord?
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of that film.
I didn't like that one that much either. Yeah.
Except this was way better than that, I felt. And the mutants.
I agree.
It was pretty awesome. This one was pretty awesome. I have to say that this guy, even though Mike, you have a good point where they're more than too long for regular anthology films. His stuff is pretty good. His stuff is good.
Minutes is too long. So
I think his stuff is good, but I don't think there's enough story for what he's. For the time he's taking. And I think I certainly would be interested in him doing full length stuff with more fleshed out stories, but you know, it's an anthology thing. So they're supposed to be short stories, shortened to the point. And I don't think they're quite as to the point as they could be.
Well, he likes the gonzo. He's a true midnight director.
Well, I don't mind the gonzo. The gonzo is fine. It's just,
42nd Street stuff.
I could see this whole thing, those two segments being fleshed out into a much larger, like 90-minute film, and sure, I might be more interested in that because I'm sitting down for a 90-minute movie,
right?
And I can certainly see that happening, but I think within especially since he's dealing with the constraints of the VHS found footage perspective, format, and that might be limiting some of the narrative choices, shall we say.
Well, I knew once I saw I press play and I saw it was like 147 minutes, or 1 hour and 47 minutes, I'm sorry, 1 hour and 47 minutes film, I immediately said, uh-oh, this is going to be a long one. And then when I went to check the directors and I saw it was his, I go, oh, that's the reason why, because you're right. He always has like a half an hour to 35 to 40 minute episode, it seems.
Right. If this whole film had been 15 minutes shorter, I think I probably would have liked it more, which is weird, but I was kind of feeling the length by the end.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah. And obviously the wraparound story doesn't help at all. So
no.
Anything else anybody wanted to bring up about the Mad Scientist episode, which is called, what the hell is it called again? The Subject. Anyone? All right. Sounds good. So we'll move on to The Terror, or simply Terror. This one's directed and written by Ryan Prose. So this one's about, homegrown terrorists or homegrown kooks. I don't know what you ever call these people, but they're basically trying to be McVeigh.
Well-regulated militia.
Basically, Timothy McVeigh's, basically a group of Timothy McVeighs.
Yes.
Is
I
there.
Thought
before Timothy McVeigh.
You're right. That's true. Let's go ahead, Chrissy.
I thought the acting in this was so bad. I couldn't. It was so bad. I'm sorry. I've seen worse acting, but this was bad.
Well, you know what? It's not. Man. I don't think it's that the acting was so bad, though it was. I think it's that the acting was so bad in this film, and especially in comparison to the other segments that we'd seen. So if I'm sitting in and I know I'm watching a $10,000 movie, I have a certain expectation. And if everybody's at that same level of bad acting, you can kind of groove into it. But it, to me, it was like jarringly bad compared to the other three segments.
Yeah, the other three segments.
Rabbit didn't help anything.
The other three segments all had solid acting. I could believe everybody in all mm-hmm. the other segments. This one here.
Especially the cyborg monster.
Well, no, but even they acted. Like as Chrissy said, they still had or Barrett, they still have humanity in them. So even though they're cyborgs and whatever, they are acting like what how they should act. You know, it was good acting and it was realistic. Here, it was just like Bill Clinton's president. It's 1994. You wouldn't be saying that to people standing next to you that all know this. You know,
and it was really extreme how much they showed them as just being dumbasses. There weren't.
We have the people marching around going. Fuck Biden. So yeah, I could see it coming up. But yeah, no, it's
no. But that's what they would have said. They would have said fuck Clinton. They wouldn't say
yeah. I don't think that the dialogue was great. I don't think and the acting didn't help sell it either. So yeah, it's
really the only great thing about this segment was the design of the vampire at the end.
Yes, yep. I agree. Yeah, that's agree. That and then that one. Shot in the green in the night vision at the end where mm-hmm. they showed the one guy trying to hide and you just saw all those crosses all over the place. I thought that was a really cool image, but honestly those were the only things I liked about this. The rest of it was stupid and it was like Phil said, as you know, Bob, everywhere. You yeah. know, and like well, that, like what
the
I
Monty Python esque blowing up of the rabbit. I was like,
yes,
yeah, that here? Was really dumb.
Oh, that was weird. Well, even when they're driving by the building they want to blow up, they go, "There's a daycare in there. That's great." And it's like, no, don't be stupid.
Yeah. Exactly.
McVeigh in his trial said they didn't even know there was a daycare in there.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, so it was just stupid. The whole
there wasn't a single smart person there. Come on, somebody was, you know, I don't know. It just was.
Well, no, there wasn't a single smart person there, but they were able to capture a vampire and figure out they could use his blood as a terrorist weapon.
Right. That was my problem with this whole sequence. They're just such idiots, yet they were able to do things. Whatever.
I was expecting there, because like the leader was such a dumbass, I was expecting there to be like some power behind the throne manipulating him.
That would have been a cool story.
Awesome. That would have been cool. Yeah, like they were just a cult for some other vampire or something. Yeah, that would have
been
awesome.
Well, like someone had like knows the vampires exist.
exist, wants to use the vampire blood as a weapon, and is using these dumbasses
as
their guinea pigs.
Right.
Because let them be the ones that blow themselves up while they're doing this and risking. But again, none of it actually goes anywhere.
Right, right. We find out that they are actually are the antagonists, and it's like, what? These guys, these guys are too stupid, and they wouldn't have a vampire and Monty Python and happy about children's schools in a building. It's just all stupid. It just doesn't make any sense. It was like, whatever. And Bill Clinton's president. Instead of saying,
like can sum up this whole sequence right there.
Right, right. I'm trying to think of something else from 1994 that they would have said that they should have said to just make it more stupid.
Well, you know what? The other one that I think I will say,
Gorbachev is prime minister.
Yeah, I will say that also caused me to roll my eye a little bit, but I've also could have seen it. In a news segment was back in the first segment was when they're talking about the internet. It's called the internet, and you know it's like, sorry Bob, but I think I'll stick with my telephone. You know, it's just that was a little on the nose to sell the time, you know, and that was kind of like where we are now.
That's another one.
With that last one, but. You know, but that also felt like that was a joke. It was obviously a joke at the audience.
Right. I'm glad they did not.
You were supposed to laugh with it. And here it feels like it's just trying to give you, not that it's a funny thing, just that it's a, hey, you know, we're in 1994, right? Did you miss that in the first three segments? This is 1994.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's what I was expecting. Yeah. I mean, it was unfortunate. It was unfortunate. Yeah. And in the reveal, to find out that it was the guy that they keep on shooting is a vampire, it's like, what?
Now I got my vampire. Where was my vampire two skits ago?
Yeah.
Well, the zombie was pretty good. Anything else anybody wanted to talk about? The terror, or terror, simply terror.
I think we can all agree it was the weakest segment.
Yeah.
What's that again, Eric?
I was just going to say, I think we can all agree it's the weakest segment.
Yeah, and unfortunately it wraps up the film with the terrible wraparound story. So it's like the last 40 minutes of the film is like, well, that's unfortunate. I was enjoying it up until...
Wow.
I know.
Well, that's why you're supposed to anchor your film. First, strongest segments are usually the beginning and the end, and the weakest is usually the second.
Right.
And I think... To me, this whole thing felt front-loaded, where I really liked the first one. I liked the second one. I really liked the first half of the third one. Mm-hmm. And then I was kind of tired of the third one by the second half, and then I didn't really care for the fourth one. And that's why I kind of left with a feeling when the movie was over. And I know we've talked about this before, and I've talked about like there were movies that my wife really enjoyed, but then doesn't like the movie because she didn't like the last 30 seconds of the movie,
right?
You know, and that the ending really, it is the feeling that you walk out of.
Well, and that's the problem with this one compared to the first three. The first three all had awesome last stories. The haunted house one and the first one, the second one was the, I think with the alien abduction one. And then the third one was the Mexican skate park. And so, and all those three were pretty awesome stories. And then this one has, Redneck City Central Crapola. Bill Clinton.
So did you just like review those? Because I, God bless your memory, man. I completely forgot almost.
Well, and here's, you know, what,
I remember for some reason because they were pretty good.
It's interesting too, Phil, because I haven't seen them and in you describing them. And this thought was kind of already in my head before we started tonight. But there is a problem in VHS 94 with balance. Right. Okay. You just described the first, second, and third ones. And I'm like, oh, sounds like there's a lot of variety, a lot of different things. This one, it opens with people with guns shooting. Then we have an urban legend. Then we have a, you know, a zombie trope. Then we have more shooting. Then we have more shooting. Like, so there's no balance. Like, if I were the editor on this, I would have said, okay, we open with shooting, then we put the rat man, then we do the shooting, then we do the zombie, then we do, you know, whatever to do at the end to balance it out. Because I think it was also, like Mike said, it was front loaded, and I agree, but it was also back loaded. You had too much. And because that wraparound story was shooting all the way through, that was a problem too, because now you have shooting, you know, little shooting tidbit, then, you know, the technology shooter thing, then little shooting tidbit, then the redneck shooting thing, then the, you know what I mean? Like, it was just too much of the same. There wasn't enough to break up, because I feel like in a lot of ways, film anthologies have to be structured sort of the same way you would structure like an anthology or like of short stories or like my magazine. I have to be really careful, and I have to sit there and be like, okay, I need the audience to not only feel like there's enough variety for everyone, but that you don't have too much of the same emotion all in a row, and that you don't have too much of the same type of material all in a row, and that you don't have, and it's a really difficult thing to do. It's really hard. And I think with this, I don't know if they just commissioned people and they all decided to write things about shooters and violence. I don't know. But there wasn't enough emotional pull back there. They needed something to... the emotional response was very uneven, and because the material was all the same, it kind of ended up feeling like, okay, I'm watching the second half of this movie now, but it's all shoot, 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 and that's not really what I'm into. Like, right, I want another break, like just something to break it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the best anthologies are things like Creepshow or Tales from the Crypt or Trilogy of Terror, where...
Oh, the first three VHSs, those were all awesome.
Where it is planned out ahead of time, right? Where VHS and ABCs of Death was another one where I think these were like farmed out, and then they kind of cobble together what they have afterwards. And I don't know that they have a whole lot of control over what.
Intentionally. But they were good. The first three.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, this one was good too. But the first three, all the stories, I pretty much liked in most of them.
Except I don't know if the
forest one, and even that one was pretty solid. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, and I kind of want to go back and watch some of those again now, because I haven't seen them in like 5 years, 6 years, whenever Viral came out.
Yeah,
I think I watched them only like once or twice.
Yeah, same here.
But I do remember liking them. And
the Spanish one was awesome, where that Eric knows the director. We saw that film, I forget what it was called, but it was the alternate world. He goes like through the That was an awesome. It was like a hell world. It was awesome. It was awesome. Yeah, there was some damn good stuff.
But I think the ones that can plan out, sometimes they get lucky, or sometimes they can figure out how to edit them together.
Right.
Like in your case, Chrissy, when you're dealing with submissions, right? You said you get like 1,000 submissions.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of them that are good, but that gives you the ability, you know, like for editing, you know, you have to have the more footage you shoot, the more the editor has to work with. The more stories you have, the more you have to work with in picking and choosing things that will fit together and flow together. Well, here it's not like you said, give me 300 shorts and I'll pick 4 or 5 to make a movie out of and can find balance that way. I think he just said, let me get some friends. Let's have them do their own little segment. Maybe they can give me a pitch, but a pitch isn't necessarily what the story is. Right. I mean, with the same basic idea that, let's say the cyborg girls, there are any sorts of ways that you could film that, and the tone can be different than the presentation. Yep. And it may not fit as well with the other segments or in the order. And yeah, I just think this was now, it's also, again, all subjective. So we may think the last segment was the weakest. Maybe the guys who put this together thought that was the best, and that's why they put it there as the anchor. It's hard to say. Okay. I just do feel like the best ones are the ones where usually it's the same director either that controls it from beginning to end. And I don't get the sense that was what happened.
Well, this one, that was unfortunate, because Bruckner was the one that put it all together, and then he had to drop out at the last minute because he got Hellraiser. So this one didn't have that strong influence like it was supposed to, because they had to shake the whole thing up at the very end. So I think that may be the reason, Mike. Well, the first, they had the producers, you know, the lead right there from the beginning.
Yeah, maybe it may just have something to do with how that was put together, and maybe it has that something to do with it. It's weird that they chose to do this now. I mean, have we been podcasting long enough for there to be nostalgia for a thing that started after we started podcasting?
Yeah, well, you know, it may have been. I know some people have said that it's a reboot, while others says it's the fourth installment in the series, but.
It's an anthology. There is no reboot. There's not like this isn't like Saw where there's an overarching story and recurring characters. This is it's just new stories, you know. It's,
but my point is that you know, I mean, even with these three, they had, but as Chrissy said, the Siren, which is a spinoff of Bruckner's college night or Bachelor Night episode in the first one. And then they had Southbound as well in between. And that Southbound was what, 4 years ago or something, with Elizabeth Olsen had a small part in that. Yeah. So
I really liked that one.
That was pretty solid too. Yeah. And Siren was pretty awesome too. But
now Southbound was, yeah, that was another one that didn't really have a wraparound segment, right? It would just basically flowed from one story to the next.
Right.
Kind of like Trick or Treat did.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. So you know, and since they were fairly successful, you know, Bruckner decided, hey, let's do it again. And so he was bringing everybody in on board to do it again. And then both him and Radio Signal, or whatever that those co-directors are called, had to bail because of Hellraiser and Scream. But the film still is getting 93% great reviews, meaning most critics are liking it, and it's over 50 reviewers, so and major reviewers too. It's not just, you know, like 10 reviewers and all scrubs. So, you know, maybe we're in the minority. I mean, again, I don't.
Oh, think maybe. But again, is it again Rotten Tomatoes? Is it?
Yeah, it's. You're
is
right.
Is it 97%? Wow! Oh my God! Or is it 97% of? That was pretty good.
Right, and also as we notice, you know, the reviewers nowadays may have 93% and then audience have 20%. And we've seen that way too much recently. And I even heard some other folks say it on various YouTube podcasts I've been watching recently, to say the exact same thing me and Barrett have been saying when we were discussing the Stan reboot. So, or the Lovecraft country, you know, where the audience didn't like it as much as the reviewers. So you're right. Rotten Tomatoes is crapola. So,
yeah, but this isn't the kind of thing like where they did three or four episodes with all a particular political point of view.
Right, right.
There's you know, no or I don't think the reviewers were like, they allowed an Asian person to direct a movie for this. How wonderful. We are going to applaud this. Or right. They mentioned the plight of the homeless, and I thought was important. Right. You know, I don't well, this well, isn't one of those they things.
they ripped into the rednecks, right?
They said, yeah, well, they did rip into the rednecks. That is true. I guess you got a point there. But I find it hard to believe that I don't know.
Oh,
they just may have been looking, going, there were 2.5 good segments out of a 4-segment film, 2.5 to 1.5. That's a winner.
Right.
Sometimes too, I mean, I don't know if this is what happened, but I know it's happened to me. I'll be doing 34 Orchard and I'll buy stories and I won't really realize that I've bought things that are similar. So like, recently, for this past issue, I found two garden stories and I bought them both. They're both set in a garden. They both happen to have people rising from the dead out of the garden. And they're very different. But I was like, dude, I can't have these both in the same issue. Like, they're not the same story, but there's a garden and it has to do with, you know, a dead person that they let go or that they're raising from the dead. So I'm like, okay, these can't be in the same issue. So did the filmmaker maybe, or did the person who put this together maybe even get all this stuff? And like you said, it could have been random, or he just did have a pile to pick from and didn't really realize. He was like, oh, I like this one, this one, this one, this one, and wasn't even like realizing or seeing the bigger picture. Because I think just for me, sometimes I don't see the bigger picture when I'm buying stuff for 34 Orchard. I'm just like, I like that, I like that, I like that. And what cracks me up is when I find four stories I bought and they all have very similar opening lines. And I'm like, oh, fuck, what do I do now? So I got to spread them out over other issues, you know?
Yeah, so there was some.
I'm just saying that could be an issue also, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I remember way back when Star Trek The Next Generation was in its first season, they had, like, episode after episode after episode of Wesley saving the ship, and very quickly people grew to hate Wesley. Not that they might not have hated him anyway, but they later admitted that they were basically just those were the best stories that people were pitching them, and they didn't realize what they were doing at the time. Like that it was like we can shake it up and throw in some worse stories in there for the sake of not doing the same thing over and over again, or we go with the best stories we had, but then they did the same thing over and over again and they pissed off a lot of people and destroyed a character for it. So yeah, it's always that balance thing is something to keep in mind. It's balance thing is always very important.
Now, since we're about 2 hours in, we should probably stop wrapping up. So let's do that. For folks who are curious, such as some of our listeners like Pam, today is October 21st, 2021, that we're recording, because sometimes we don't necessarily release episodes the very next week. And they're always curious, some of our listeners, when it was actually recorded. Since we've already recorded 2 hours, we won't do news or anything like that. So before we wrap up our final thoughts on this film, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askansity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can get it wherever you found this one.
Excellent. And Mike, all of our Cinema a la carte episodes will be released by the time this episode is released. What is that podcast? And that we're about to record a new episode on. Me and Mike and Eric will discuss a possible date in early November. Go on, Mike.
Flash. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was our latest episode. Cinema a la carte is the spinoff of Dark Discussions, where we review non-Dark Discussions films, like the recent episode that just dropped about Flash Gordon, and other things such as Jack Reacher and Collateral and Inside Out and Solid.
And also, by the time people hear this episode, A History of Violence.
A History of Violence. So, yeah, there's we do that. The idea was to do it monthly when we weren't also doing other things. And then a lot of us started doing other things. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So it's now going to probably start coming back monthly now since the back catalog is all released now, and we're not doing all these extra podcasts at the moment. So we'll probably be able to get one recorded in November and probably released by the end of November. So that's a good thing. Chrissy, you do things.
Yes, I do. I am founding editor of a magazine called 34 Orchard, which is dark literary fiction. And I've been writing a lot of short stories lately, and I don't know, I've just got my finger in a lot of pies. But you can find out more about me at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com. And if you misspell it, don't worry, just Google some semblance of that name. As far as I know, still, I am the only Christy Peterson Schoonover on the planet right now. So you should be able to find me pretty easily.
All right. Sounds good. And Barrett, myself and you, I've done some another side podcast and recently. What's that all called about?
Halloween Boutique Psychotronic Reviews. And soon we will be doing probably some Grindhouse films. That's, I think, next on our plan. And what's the last movie that we released? I can't think of the name of it for some reason.
Yeah, what the heck was that? Halloween Boutique Secretary Reviews. Oh, I Without a Face, right?
I Without a Face, yes. Yeah. That was an enjoyable one to review.
Yeah, that was pretty good episode. That one we
pretty
had.
Gross.
Well, I Without a Face is basically the eye is the camera in your laptop.
And, oh, okay.
It was five.
I was just picturing that disembodied eyeball, which is pretty gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of gross. But yeah. Once you start see the film, it makes sense immediately. And
is it as gross as the homeless person with his poop smeared all over him?
And we had Kevin Letts and Sean Fox and Johnny Noel joined myself and Barrett on that episode. So it was a pretty good discussion. Look for our Midnight Movie Grindhouse, 4 episodes to probably start recording in November. All right, so I guess we can get into our final thoughts on this film here. So, Eric, go ahead.
This was decent. Some segments were stronger than others, but if you got a Shudder subscription, you might as well check it out.
All right, sounds good. Chrissy.
My ultimate summation of this is, if you're looking for something spooky and fun and quick, then this is your bag. I totally agree with Eric. I totally agree with Mike. I think I'm pretty much on board with everybody with this one. But if you're just looking to have a good time, and especially if you like a lot of shoot 'em up type things, and especially if you play shooter games, honestly, I think you're going to enjoy this. So I would just, get it. If you have Shudder, it's free anyway. The beauty of Shudder is, you get 5-10 minutes in, you hate it, you just turn it off and go look for something else. But yeah, I think it's fun for, especially for the season, I think it's fun. It's as far as a person who watches a lot of found footage, though, this in the found footage realm, I would have to rate this pretty low. But for a good time, yeah, go ahead and watch it. Check it out.
All right, sounds good. For me, it's the weakest in the VHS series, though. The first 3 stories are as solid as many of the stories in the other 3 episodes of the VHS series. The problem is basically the last episode or story in the wraparound, as Mike mentioned, kind of have you leave the film like a little down, when if that story wasn't there, or if that story had been somewhere in the middle, you could have left this film thinking it was better than you do. But all in all, as Chrissy said, it's definitely worth a watch. And if you like found footage and anthologies in the VHS series itself, definitely check it out. Mike?
Yeah, look, if you like anthologies and or found footage films, it's certainly worth checking out. I would definitely check out the first 3 VHS films before this, because I think they're all probably better. And every anthology is a matter of, do the individual episodes work for you? Because you never know what you're going to get, other than the fact in this case that they're all found footage. And, some people just don't like whatever, zombie films or action horror or whatever it might be, or science fiction horror. So you may end up getting 3 subgenres that you just don't work for you. So it's a very, very hit and miss thing. But if you've already seen the first 3 VHS films and you like those, I could certainly suggest giving this one a try. Maybe don't watch the last segment. Then that will save the movie for you. This doesn't ruin the last one didn't ruin the film for me. You just kind of walk out going, meh. And I kind of felt meh about the film as a whole. Talking about it again reminded me that I did really enjoy the first segment, and I like things in that second segment, and I like the first half of the third segment. So there is actually a lot I would recommend. I just have trouble recommending the entire sandwich because somebody put a pickle in it. That's the problem.
Pickles are the best, but I have to disagree with you. I'm like, pickles are awesome, but I understand.
Yeah, Eric, you heard him. He wants to eat your kitty.
Barrett, what do you got?
I enjoyed this film. It's got some issues for sure. It's not perfect, but I generally enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun film.
All right, sounds good. So this film here, once again, directors include Simon Barrett and Timo Tejanto, as well as newcomers such as Chloe Okuno, Jennifer Reeder, and Prose. What's his first name? Prose. Ryan Prose. So the film is available on Shudder, as Eric said. And it kind of fits in with the first three. So, yeah, check it out if you want. And with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening. Let's talk about VHS 94. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.